I myself was studying this stuff. Well, I found Keenan's article and really digested it. And my competitor in the retrograde condensation paper was Sage and Lacey, you know, who they were at Caltech. Of course, I got to know them very well. I visited them in 36 on a trip to California, so I knew them very well over the years. They were providing me the data, the methane-propane data they sent me while I was at Phillips, I mean, in industrial engineering chemistry. It was very helpful. So I was a supporter of theirs, but they never ran. I took the methane-propane blind cell data and drew the phase diagram with what a particular methane-propane system would have looked like in pressure, volume, pressure, temperature, percent vapor, and liquid. And I drew one, and I sent it to them. I said, does this look like what you think it was? And he said, well, you plotted it from our data. That's good to us. I published it. And then I said, well, we must run one. And that's when we ran one, you see. So that these were the things that helped me. But I found in the literature something that no one had ever done. If you want to put it pretty crassly, as of 1910, the physicists and physical chemists who worked in phase behavior dropped the subject like a hot potato. They may have written summary articles. Sidney Young ran one in 1910. He ran a retake in 1929 on his vapor pressure and critical phenomena. But all the rest dropped out, so to speak. And they dropped out so well that the physical chemists and the physicists teaching phase behavior and thermodynamics applications did not even know it. Ben Lindsley saying methane was in the liquid, wouldn't go in the liquid state, you see. And I had to relearn it all, and then I found it was in here, see? I found Villard, the Frenchman, who ran hydrate, gas hydrates is one of my fields. While I was at Phillips, Hammerschmidt had his paper on gas hydrates. He didn't find this literature. He only found a review article in German, 1928 or something. I happened to get acquainted personally very well with Hammerschmidt later because I worked for the same company he did as a consultant. But anyway, I found Villard had run the methane hydrate to 4,000 pounds in 1895. He had run the solubility of solids and liquids in gases in 1895 to 4,000 pounds. He took iodine crystals, put a gas over it, methane or some other gas, other gases, I can't remember exactly what they were, and showed that as he pressurized, he could see the violet vapors come off the crystals. He put paraffin wax in and see it disappear. And then he would let the pressure down and see these things precipitate on the walls. He understood pressure phenomena. You see, one way of saying it today is that in petroleum production, instead of using, like they do in refining, in refining they use temperature to vaporize. In petroleum production, we use pressure, gas pressure. You can take any oil or a liquid, put it in a chamber, put a gas above it, put a piston on, and compress it and compress it and compress it. You can make anything vaporize excepting asphalt. I found out. I had a man who was going to study asphalt. I had a 30,000-pound cell, and he never got to do it because his windows didn't hold well enough to do. He ran an experiment that was good, up to 14,000. But anyway, I found out all this material. I found, of course, I have reviewed the literature, and I found an article on the continuity of the gases in liquid states where they ran the PVT data for carbon dioxide. The article is in here. I reproduced the Joel Thompson article in here. I put my retrograde condensation paper in here. I put in a summary of all the papers Sage and Lacey had published, of Sidney Young's papers, of Brown and my papers. I put in the original article on discovery of critical. I put in Faraday's discovery of hydrate with working for Humphrey Davies, I guess he was, in 1823. I put in the hydrate stuff in here. So that's all in here. And I was the only person really who you know, the publishing through a local company in Ann Arbor, it didn't really get very far. It's out of print, of course, excepting through the University of Microfilms. But that's what this, and the study I made at the time I did that, was what gave me a reputation, because I really, well, I had a good enough reputation then by 1939 or 40 that the people who were doing cycling, you know what cycling is, you've got a high-pressure gas field with liquids dissolved in it. It would make you a couple hundred barrels of liquid in the separator when you produce the gas. And they would take a gas field. Well, Humble Oil sold gas fields like that to Lone Star. Lone Star took the field, drilled the wells, produced the liquid out of it for the gas, and took the gas from the separator, compressed it and put it back, and displaced it, called cycling. And this, of course, was preventing retrograde condensation, you see. And the operators that had these plants in Texas, they had me retained by mail, never visited or anything, with the retainer fee by 1940, you see. And I worked with them, and I worked with a case where they sued Lone Star for cycling these companies, and they organized a company to exploit these patents. Humble, Standard of New Jersey, Standard of Indiana, and Tidewater Seaboard. They had these patents, and they sued Lone Star, and in 1 week of the depositions of the inventor, we caused the company to disappear and the subject fade away, 1943. So I had an early experience with patents and with these companies. In the summer of 41, when I worked with Phillips, I spent the summer half-time studying the literature of high-pressure phase behavior in the fields.
I wanted to ask you, since you brought that up, that how those summer jobs, why didn't you stay in Ann Arbor during the summer?
Well, partly for money, partly for chance. I like the industry work, too. I like to work in industry. Mm-hmm. Phillips wrote and asked me to come back in the summer of 1940, and I said, well, all right, I'll come for the summer, you know, 12 weeks or something. And I went there, and they said, well, we're not going to have you work in Bartlesville in our offices. We're going to have you take charge of a group of engineers that are studying the Oklahoma City field. The man in charge... Up to now, they were men loaned by the oil companies. And they had an office and a couple secretaries and a draftsman. But the man in charge had done something bad with the funds they gave him to run the thing with, the Secondary Recovery Association. So they let him go. And I was asked to take charge. And because I had not registered yet, that was the summer of 40, they had to have another man to be the official running of the engineering group, if you want to call it that. He was the official engineer because he was the only one registered in our group. Of course, I went home and got registered myself the next year. But that summer, in 12 weeks, we made a study of the Oklahoma City secondary recovery. That's when I did the wettability study. I showed the gravity drainage of the oil out of the Oklahoma City field was what the mechanism was. And we wrote a report for the Recovery Association. Bob Kerr, of the Kerr-McGee, and I, of course, knew Dean McGee. He's the one who introduced me to geology at Phillips. They were Dean McGee. I followed him, you know, intervals of 3-4 years. I see him somewhere. Anyway, he was in the same office I worked for, the Secondary Recovery Association. And we made a report, and we laid it on their desk when I got through in the middle of September, and I went back for a meeting with the association. So that I did that, and I also, so the gravity drainage, the wettability, were the two things came out of that. In the summer of 41, Phillips asked me to come back, and I went there in the Bartlesville lab. I did one thing, was a study of the distillate retrograde condensate. The patent was still in doubt, you see. The other thing I did was to help them run higher pressure vapor liquid equilibrium. We ran to 3,200 pounds when I was there. They got it up to 9,200 when I was there that summer. I directed their work. And I also directed a study of the compressibility factors. And I had a paper with the Gas Processing Association in 1942 that showed that gas gravity was a good variable to represent the composition of a gas, natural gas, if it didn't have a lot of non-hydrocarbons in it. Published this paper in 1942 with the Gas Processors Association. So that was a good experience, too. And, of course, my graduate students were... I wasn't gone long enough to hurt them too much.
How many graduate students were you dealing with by 1940?
Well, I only probably had two or three, four at a time, maybe. I had a very bad experience. It was partly my fault and partly the unreliability of a man that should have been better. He was a teaching fellow, Willard Wilcox, my first doctorate student. He took a problem on gas hydrates. We had these glass-windowed cells. Instead of having them in an air bath, we had them in a water bath. The water bath had an ordinary plate glass window on it. We didn't know any better. No mirrors. He and I had worked on them in the room, 3,000 pounds. Brown and I had worked on them right in front of them, nothing in front of it. They were half-inch glass, clear glass, and we knew what we were doing. And Willie was running the hydrate formation condition for natural gases. One day he came in and said to me, "I've gone to 4,000 pounds. "Ooh," I said, "don't ever." And I made him promise me never to go above 3,000 again. I said, "We just don't know." I didn't know enough to know and say, "Well, we better get a mirror on your window if you're going to do that sort of thing." And he promised me he'd never go over 3,000 again. Now, Villard, this man, ran the ethane. And ethane, he said, had a critical in the hydrate. So he was looking for a high-pressure critical, not understanding it, of course. And it turned out that ethane liquefied, therefore he didn't have it abruptly stopped going up with pressure and temperature. Anyway, Fred Carrata, the other student of mine, was in the lab. And he was in there about 2 weeks after this incident with me, and he said, "I got her to 4, and I'm going to 5. And Fred said, "I'm leaving," and he got out the door and walked down the hall, and it went bang. And the glass cut him so badly, he died on the way to the hospital. Awful. He had been 2 years with Dow Chemical in pilot plant work. He was a teaching fellow. But that started me on a road to safety interest.
That's another topic I had wanted to talk to you about later on.
We finished his paper, and I went on with hydrate work. All master's people, though. He was the only doctorate student. He got his degree, I guess, in absentia. I mean, that's the wrong word. You know, after he died.
Posthumous,
yeah.
Did you continue to develop the reservoir engineering concept while you were doing these other...
Yes, I did, in a sense. Hello! Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
You're in part of this and not part of it. I don't...
What's your name? Jim
Boning.
Excuse me.
Nice to meet you.
Jim Boning.
Watch the court. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, when are you going to get past 1941?
We're just getting there now.
5 years.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Well, we'll just keep going and see if.
All right.
Do you like to use the lavatory?
No, I'm fine.
Or a glass of water?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Crackers?
Where were we?
I had asked you if you had continued the development of the reservoir engineering concept.
Yes, I. What I'm finding now is that when I look at it, I did not, and many people did not use the word reservoir engineering, but we all knew it that way as a concept. But we called it other things along the way. And I am studying the found that John Calhoun was the first, I believe, who began using it as a title of a book. He was a series of articles, and then later became a book, Reservoir Engineering. But I thought of it that way, you know.
What were the other title terms you used then, if you didn't use that term directly?
Well, we would describe what we were doing.
I see.
Flow through porous media. We would talk about, you know, the dew point of a gas, the retrograde behavior of fluids, the effect of pressure on viscosity. We would describe the physical phenomenon itself rather than use the word reservoir engineering.
Okay.
I even don't have the word reservoir engineering in the handbook as an index item.
Hmm.
But I describe all the things in it, but I think of it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And the words are a shorthand way of saying the whole thing.
Right.
For example, one of the things we did was to show that if you know the composition of a gas and you know the composition of a liquid, you can tell if they're in the same reservoir or not. And I did that on Rodessa Field in 1936, I guess it was, for Phillips. They had a gas field producing, selling gas. And in the same zone, down structure, they found an oil well. Bureau of Mines ran the analysis, and I got the analysis. I made my calculations and showed, my golly, that was the gas field over the oil. And they were blowing the gas off and selling it. See, and they shouldn't have, you know. So Phillips management knew that, you see. So that was, of course, a reservoir engineering thing, a concept that no one else had ever come across, you see, to look at reservoir equilibrium. But I had the viscosity, well, I had the phase behavior. Standing ran the vapor-liquid equilibrium to 8,000 pounds for me. And it got the density of the vapor and the density of the liquids with picnometers, steel picnometers. He's retired now. He went through grades with Chevron, running the lab at La Habra, and then being their reservoir engineer teacher through the years. And he worked in Norway for 2 years after he retired from Chevron, and then he went taught some at Stanford for a while. Now he's at a retirement village south of Los Angeles. The next one was Fred Carrada, who got his doctors with me, and was at Kansas and is gone now. But he worked phase behavior in the laboratory all his life. But he did the criticals. Not the first one, but the one retrograde condensation article. Charlie Weinug was the next one who did the surface tension. That's still holding the formula he came up with. And we're now looking at some paracores with my boy from Iran. And we're going to have a meeting in September looking at paracores for the heavy constituents. But we had a group in SBE that put together the best papers on phase behavior. And I chaired the session and had about the best, one of the good men from each of the oil and gas companies, and then Bill Swift from the University of Kansas. And they nominated the papers to be reproduced, no matter where they came from. And the surface tension type thing, the review paper that showed the surface tension was there. Okay, goodbye. I got mine. And so on it went. Viscosity was Leo Beecher. Now, we had the rolling ball viscosimeter. And the rolling ball viscosimeter had turbulence problems at high flow rates, high ball roll rates. Actually, Sage and Lacey did the rolling ball viscosimeter data on methane. And it was a preprint distributed. And about 3 months later, you got a new one. Please throw the old one away and use this one. And I, of course, knew them well enough to have them tell me what the problem was at the next meeting we ran it to. And they said, well, it turned out that the high rates, the turbulence in the crescent where the fluid flows through in the rolling ball viscosimeter was such that in the low density region, you didn't have it correct. You couldn't calibrate it well. And, of course, we didn't do that with I ran the methane propane system. And in the low density, some of our data were not as good. The, I'm thinking of the name. I believe it's called a Reynolds method of getting the viscosity, is where you have only a little bit of mercury head to push it through an orifice in a cell under pressure. The people at Cummings, Ed Cummings did it at, with ethylene at Purdue, and then the people at the Institute of Gas Technology did it in Chicago, the viscosity with the new type. And what it amounts to is they run it through a capillary more slowly, under control. Well, so my data, although it showed for operating purposes in the reservoir work, and how gas gravity could be used. A man used gas gravity instead of molecular weight, and his paper was accepted as a very good contribution. So I went on. I did work with the API predicting, if you know the composition of an oil, you can predict the shrinkage and the solubility. And I got the industry to send me oil samples and the results of solubility and shrinkage, and I came up with methods of standing at the wellhead and from the gas oil ratio and the gas gravity and the oil gravity, I could tell them a lot about the reservoir. I did these in 38-39. Dr. Standing, Muzz Standing, made essentially a full-time life career on expanding on that plus the phase equilibrium he did in his thesis. He has a book, Volumetric Properties of the Hydrocarbons. I had two versions. One of them is sold now through the SPE, Society of Petroleum Engineers, of course, at Dallas. And the other one, the first edition, was through Reinhold, I believe, Book Company. It was really an expansion of this work I did and the vapor-liquid equilibria, and very well done. Muzz Standing received the Lucas Medal from the SPE before I did, and he's now a member of the Academy, the National Academy of Engineering, for his work. And it was a, you know, just a small fraction of the kind of work that I did, but done so well for the practicing people. So the Norway wanted him to come and teach there, and he taught the engineers with Chevron worldwide. So I did have that interest. I dropped out of the reservoir engineering of that kind for oil field. Well, I had several cases, you know, one with the city service and other places, but I turned my attention to heat transfer in part. Then I turned my attention to, I did that in the 40s. When the people went to war, I took up their problems and did the Faust work while he was gone and got into heat transfer with thin tubes. And I wrote with Knudsen. I started it and Knudsen finished it, fluid mechanics and heat transfer. Then I went into gas storage starting in about 1949.
Could we talk a little bit about the war years?
Yes. The war years...
What had at the university and...
Well, we had a large group of people to teach from the Navy on a three-semester-a-year basis. I taught nearly all the time. I got off 2 months 1 year. 1 month I spent in Calgary working with the government of British Columbia, of Alberta, on the Turner Valley Field. I was the government's witness on how to handle gas and oil production in the Turner Valley Field. It was quite a thrill to, you know, to be the government's witness and then to go to lunch with the man in charge. They were fine people to work for. And I met some of the other people, Ralph Davis, for example, in the gas engineering. And he got introduced to different methods of looking at things, and I did too. The second month I went to Erath, Louisiana, month of April, and I was there during the near the end of the war. Roosevelt died while I was there, and it was on two-phase sampling with pitot tubes, if we'll put it that way. We did a major project for the gas processors people because they had all these wells in the condensate wells, and they had to know how much condensate came from each well because of the royalty, and the plant ran the wells from many people. And they know what each well was supposed to do and the yield of liquid per unit of gas. They knew what the plant made, and so they divided the plant product according to these individual well tests. And it was a nuisance and a very difficult thing. And so we calibrated and showed how these things worked. And the people in Ann Arbor did not get into the research. Rushton was the man's name that came to Michigan to teach with me. He got into oxygen production, for example, during the war. I did not get into war production work. Brown didn't either during the war. He was with National Dairy, I believe, or things of this kind. He did not get a major project like most schools did. He later became he's called chief engineer of the Atomic Energy Commission. I did a lot of little problems. For example, 1943, I suppose it was, Kellex came to me, Kellex Corporation, a subsidiary of Kellogg's that built the Oak Ridge diffusion plant, and they came to me and said, we want some tests run on heat transfer through fin tubes. The Chrysler Corporation is making us a special fin tube, and we want to pick banks of these fin tubes, and you find the coefficient of the heat transfer on the outside of the tubes. And we said, well, we can do it, you know, 6 weeks. If it takes you 3 weeks to get the tube banks made and we'll get our apparatus ready, we'd run it already for the Wolverine Tube Company. And so we ran the data. They had George Cooper from Kellex sitting with us, and he was calculating the data as we ran it and reported it to Manson Benedict, who was doing the design. We didn't know what it was, who for, but Chrysler made a million feet of these intercoolers and the diffusion, both these gaseous diffusion plants, and we had run the heat transfer coefficients. Little things like that I was doing, and then of course I was teaching all the time until 46, I guess, when I went. I had a project with API on the design and construction of pressure relieving systems. This was started during the war but ended afterwards. This was safety again. We visited 30 refineries or high-pressure gas plants to see how they handled safety valves and what the incidents they had of malfunctioning or improper use or something, and fires, of course, were the one problem. But we had 30 plants we visited. I had an assistant, Nell Sylvander, who left there and went with the Library, Pennsylvania Coal Project, and then he was a director and is retired now from Penwalt. Mm-hmm. Penwalt. I called him the other day on St. Patrick's Day, and I said, where were you 40 years ago today? He said, well, I don't know. And I said, well, I'll tell you. You were on top of the RCA building watching the St. Patrick's Day parade down Fifth Avenue. I sat with you. We had been to the API headquarters that morning, nothing to do in the afternoon, and we went up there and watched it, and we came down and tried to go over there, and the police wouldn't let us through, and we said, well, a lady tried to get over through there, and he said, she can't go, and she said, why can't I go? And he said, it's St. Patrick's Day, madam. But anyway, this was another safety project, you see, and we have a booklet called Design and Construction of Pressure Relieving System, a department, engineering research department project. We actually built a small fire vessel and watched the heat transfer and take it. You mentioned a man from...
Otto?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He came and consulted with us. Now, I didn't know his theoretical work as well as I might have. And I had a continuing project that would have been a large-scale fire that we would have studied. And they did not go on with it. Of course, he was the expert. We met with him, knew him, and I learned a lot about it, but I never really got into the work, but I'm quite familiar with it. And I, of course, know his work very well. Know of it. I don't mean that I understand it. I'm not a wave man in that sense. But this was another safety project. We found many problems, and I've done some consulting a little bit. Eastman Kodak had some problems with the blowouts toxins or shock waves and so on.